Let's get her going on our national hour. It's the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. We are live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Jay Woodcroft, former head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, and now part of Team Canada and their coaching staff for the upcoming World Championship. You good, Sammy?
Sammy's favorite tournament of the year.
Say my comments.
Just loves a good world championship.
Oh, yeah. Give me Bedard and Crosby together, boys.
We'll get a ton in with Jay, including what his thoughts are on his former team, Edmonton, with their impressive 1-0 score. Did we ever envision Edmonton winning a game like that?
No is the answer. That was not the way we saw it going with them. I saw an Oiler fan tweet, congrats to the Oilers for killing that 58-minute power play that the Kings appeared to
have. Yeah, well, how many shots they end up with? They had like nothing.
13, yeah. I think, yeah.
That, to me, showed me a lot. Like, it's just like, you know.
Do it a different way.
If they can play, they can do the up-tempo, they can do that. Like, that, to me.
It's a good sign.
Scary team.
Yeah, when you start finding different ways to win that don't include...
Give it to McDavid.
McDavid needing to carry everything with Draisaitl, that's a really good sign.
It is funny. We just did the Leafs Hour, who have one goal on 17 power plays or something to that effect. I think McDavid has 8 power play points.
It's one for 14. Number. Yeah.
The other good sign, I think, for Vancouver fans is that it ain't over until it's over.
Oh, yeah.
That was one heck of a last few minutes to watch.
What a push. What a game by Brock Besser. Quinn Hughes absolutely juked someone out of their jock strap.
It was Nyquist. There was actually like the video of it. He goes down the boards, goes by him, and Gus Nyquist is gone. He's like out of the picture. Like, he's not even back in the frame.
Not to make Leaf fans feel bad or Sammy.
Yeah, okay, great.
But that's how you get a fan base to really get excited.
What happened last year with the Leafs? When Ryan O'Reilly ties it late against Tampa, they win an OT.
A moment.
They have the 4-1 comeback in Tampa where Kerfoot scores in overtime.
This is the whole thing being a fan. If you get a moment like that per year, it's worth being a fan.
Oh, it's the best. It's actually, boys, this is really sad. Sorry to our national audience. A year ago this evening, John Tavares slipped one by Andre Vasilevsky to give the Leafs their first series win since 2004.
What a moment for Canucks fans who didn't think they'd have one this soon, I don't think.
And it was like... You think Quinn Hughes could disappear on any other shift, you know, based on a bad shoulder, getting hammered. And then to Sammy's point, what an amazing, like less than a minute, he's got the puck in his own zone. He's absorbing everything. He's sorting everything out. And he makes just a brilliant play to start the whole thing.
I mean, and how about the different visuals in that game where you have Pettersson getting bowled over in a goal celebration where he's like kind of in the way and they body him down to the ground and they're all dejected. I watched the third period of that game. I was like, this is hopeless. There's no way. And then
he might quit.
I know.
At one point he was like, he looked like he didn't want to be there.
I know. I'm like, you see all the videos of people reacting to those big goals and you know, it's like the Vancouver Toronto rivalry is real, but yeah, gotta be happy for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good on him.
That was great.
All right, let's welcome him in. Jay Woodcroft, former head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, now jumping on a plane fairly soon. Jay, how are you? Thanks for joining us. I know, you know, we haven't, seen you around too often, so getting you on our show is a nice treat for us. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. It's a real pleasure, and you mentioned there, Nick. About to go overseas here pretty soon, and so you caught me at a good time.
So just give us a bit of a background. When did it all come together for you? And, just what are you looking forward to the most?
Well, probably happened about 10 days ago or so. I was approached by the general manager of our men's national team, Rick Nash, and then also talked to Andre Tournier, the head coach of the team, and they asked if I'd be interested in going over to Prague and trying to win another gold medal. And, you know, I've only done this one other time before in 2015. We had an excellent group that was fortunate to win the gold medal that year. Ironically, it was in Prague. So when I was presented with that opportunity and listening to Rick Nash and Andre Tournier, you know, I accepted and I'm really excited about it.
Jay, you've been coaching at the, you know, the pro level for some 20 years now, and this was probably your first time having a stretch of hockey where you weren't on a bench. How was it? How was your experience this year, and how eager are you to get back at it here?
Well, you know, you're exactly right. I got some great advice from some mentors around the league that I've worked with and some that I didn't work with. And they, you know, they said, you've been doing this for 20 years straight, going 100 miles an hour. It's okay to take a deep breath and spend some quality family time. And that's something that I really dug into. I got a fantastic wife, two great kids. Spent a lot of time, you know, but right around the month of January when the calendar flipped, you know, I was eager to flex some hockey muscles and, you know, just eager to be around the game a little bit more. And I spent the month of February over in Europe and was able to be around two quality organizations in two different countries. Was welcomed in by two different coaching staffs at different points of their year. And, you know, it just met some really good people, you know, some really good hockey people, picked up a few things here and there. And, you know, I'm going to certainly bring some of it in to my next opportunity, wherever and whenever that might be.
We're talking to Jay Woodcroft, former head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, now part of Team Canada's coaching staff for the upcoming World Hockey Championship. So just touching on that experience, Jay, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were behind a coaching bench, coaching Stevie Yzerman, Brendan Shanahan, and you're in your mid-40s here. Like, is good time to reflect on the experience that you've had? And it's not like you're 65 here, you know? it's quite remarkable, a guy your age right now, who still, in my opinion, would be one of the younger guys to go behind a bench again, but thinking about what you've experienced up until this point.
Yeah, what a fortunate person I am, because I've had not only raised by great parents and in a great family, you know, but also, you know, when I started my coaching career, I was worked for three proud organizations in the Detroit Red Wings, San Jose Sharks, and Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, I had the opportunity to work under some really good coaches. I've built a lot of really good relationships over those 20 years. And, you know, like you said, I would consider myself a young 47, but to have the experiences that I've had and been behind the bench as long as I've been and worked with the quality of people and the quality of players that I've been able to work with, I consider myself very fortunate. And like I said, I'm looking forward to bringing that with me here as the Canadian men's national team heads over to Prague, but certainly in my next opportunity as well.
So with all your experience, I'd love to get your take on the difference in regular season and playoffs. Just watching some great offensive teams, Vancouver Canucks, you know, could produce all year long. I think they had 12 shots in their last win. The Oilers had 13 in a 1-0 win the other day. You know, and here in Toronto, you know, they just can't get to the net and score a goal. So, you know, what is that fundamental difference? Is it simply better teams, different styles? What do you chalk it up to?
Well, I think when Game 83 gets played, there's a certain type of hockey that you start seeing, and certainly time and space is at a premium. The ability to get pucks through to the net is at a premium. And I think, you know, it's a fabulous playoffs this year. It's very exciting. You know, for me, I think the key is trying to find ways to win games. And that's the most important thing. And finding different ways to win hockey games, you know, regardless of the amount of shots on net. And I think that's what you use an 82-game schedule to do. It's to set yourself up to find ways to build a game when everything might not be going, you know, to your liking. And for me, like I said, I've been really impressed with the quality of play in this year's playoffs.
Pretty good example, 1-0, your former team, the Edmonton Oilers. What have you seen out of them down the stretch and early in these playoffs?
Well, I haven't watched much of the Edmonton Oilers since I was let go there in November. It was a choice I made that, you know, I spent more time studying the league and studying trends that are occurring during the league. For me, I've spent a lot of time during this playoffs watching the Eastern Conference. And like I said, I've been very impressed, specifically with the competition level in some of these series, how hard these teams are playing, the physicality, and not just fisticuff physicality, but the willingness to take a hit to make a play, the willingness to get to hard areas on the ice, the willingness of certain teams to play on the inside. It's quite evident to me to see how the teams that are going to move on, the reason why they're moving on.
So, well, how do you feel about the best way to get underachieving stars going at times? We talked about John Cooper was saying to his guys when they fell down the series, you know, if you don't think we can get it done, don't show up. Sheldon Keefe taking a different tact and saying, you know, I actually like our game and trust that our guys are going to be okay. What are your thoughts on sort of the best way to handle these things?
Well, I think there's different approaches. The big thing for me would be to try and take the pressure off that individual player or off the team in general. I think for teams that have their back up against the wall, those teams, I think, just need to focus on trying to win one game. I know that you know, in certain sticky circumstances in Edmonton over the last few playoff runs, and we were fortunate to play a lot of playoff games over the last two playoff runs. In sticky circumstances, we reminded our players that, that we had to take care of the day's business, take care of what was immediately in front of us. And I think when you narrow the focus of a player or a team, it allows you to get the best out of them. And so for me, if I had any advice to those teams that with their back up against the wall, so to speak, it would be to focus just on winning one game.
Hey, Jay, when we see how tight checking it is and, you know, some stars can overcome it, some have a more difficult time. But how important is it to have a different layer coming from the back end? And last night we saw the very best in the world in Cale Makar. And just that support group and the depth that he allows the forwards. But, like, how important is that to have a guy like that to go deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Very important. You know, I know in my first playoff run here in Edmonton, we got to the conference final. And I saw firsthand just how effective Cale Makar is. What a hockey player. He's a one-man breakout. And certainly, I think when you activate defensemen in all three zones, you get them up and involved in the play, it makes you that much more of a difficult team to defend. But I think in general, today's game is about being connected five men and activating five people. To me, they're hockey players and not just you know, tethered by being called a defenseman. And you can see certain teams that have those weapons are having some success here in this playoff run. The other thing I would say is that, you know, at this time of year, the teams that are having success are the ones that are fighting for space out there, because space is at such a premium. The teams that fight for space instead of looking for space, those are the ones that I think you see move on. You know, we were talking earlier about game 83. To me, when the playoffs begin, what happens in the league is that you've chopped off 16 teams. You've narrowed how good the league is, and it got better on that day. Well, pretty soon the first round of the playoffs is going to be over, and the league is going to get better. And that's what happens as you march your way into a Stanley Cup final. And I think the teams that have success, like I said, are the ones that fight for space, not just look for space.
So, Jay, you started off as a video coach, I believe, which is a very noble profession, I'm told, in 2005. And I imagine the evolution in how games are covered and prepared for has changed drastically over time. You know, tell us about what you've seen in the different ways that you prepare for an opponent in a playoff series than you were able to then.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, at that time I began right after the full season lockout, and there was a huge change in the technology at that time. Most teams before I began working, most teams only have one computer for an entire coaching staff, or a pinnacle machine, it was called. And that's how games were cut up. And there was a lot of VHS, and then eventually it went to DVD. But when I started to work, we were one of the first teams to adopt a computer for each coach on the staff. And I can tell you this, you're right, it is a noble profession. Those are some of the most unsung heroes in an organization because they work extremely hard. But for me as a young guy, I think I was 28 years old at the time, to get my foot in the door in an entry-level position, learn from the quality of coaches that I was learning from. Again, I am going to use the word fortunate. I was very fortunate. And I think that understanding of how technology works and that how information is shared on a cohesive and coherent coaching staff, that helped me as I moved up the ladder and became, you know, a third assistant and then a second assistant, then a lead assistant, and eventually my own head coach. I think the better you understand that, the faster you're able to work, and you eliminate a lot of the hiccups that some teams or some staffs have with technology by having that understanding.
So, Jay, that back then it was strictly the eye test, right? The optics of what you saw on video. But today you add to that the analytics, what the numbers are telling you. So as a coach today, how do you decipher what is more important here, the eye test or the numbers or what your gut is telling you?
Well, I think all of those are important. And I think, you know, the new in vogue term is analytics and stuff like that. And I was fortunate to work with some of those teams that are so-called analytic darlings, the ones that are held up as some of the best teams ever. And, you know, they did this and they did that. And I can tell you at the time, we didn't talk a lot about the term analytics. We just talked about it as doing our work. We put a lot of focus on the tactics that led to those numbers, not the numbers in and of themselves. That said, I'm, you know, up to date with the times. I spend a lot of time thinking about ways to improve. I think analytics are part of today's game. I don't think they're the only part of today's game. I think there has to be room for things that you can't measure. You know, for example, Nick, when you played, if someone gave you a shot off a faceoff, how do you respond to that? That doesn't show up in a number analytically, but that has an effect in the way the game is played. I do believe there's room for things that you can't measure, but I think today's coaches, you're dealing with a lot of different types of information, video, eye test, analytics, human intelligence. There's lots of things that you have to deal with. I think the best ones are ones that can work through that puzzle and put the pieces together. And I know that I get a lot of really good information from analytics. I'm not afraid of them. In fact, you know, I look forward to seeing some of the information come my way, but it's not the only thing behind the decisions I make.
So with all those things, you can kind of work through them, right? It's a little piece of the analytics and you watch a video and you talk about your systems. When you're talking about goaltending as a head coach, you just kind of go, I don't know. Like, you know, like you just like hand it off to some other guy in the staff and hope he knows what he's doing a little bit. Is there a bit of helplessness that comes with relying so heavily on a guy that doesn't really fall under your purview?
Yeah, certainly. You know, that's, you know, they should have their own category for sure. And, you know, most staffs have great goaltending coaches and a goaltending department that deals with that type of thing. But yeah, I know for me as a head coach, I kind of deferred on that with the goalie department and, yeah, and some of, you know, what was going on down there.
So have you had a chance to see the roster yet in terms of your Team Canada? Who are you looking forward to working with the most here?
Well, you know, this past week, I spent the last few days in Arizona as a staff. It was great. It was a great get-together. Andre Tournier had everybody on the coaching staff, a couple members of the Hockey Canada offices, and Kyle Dubas as well was there. He's part of the management staff for the team as well. And we spent some time talking about the way we wanted to play. We went over the roster. We went over the minutia details that go with you know, a training camp and then the tournament itself. And I think it was a really good experience because what it did, it sets us up to hit the ground running when we land in Europe. There's no getting to know you phase. I thought it was really well done. And, you know, certainly we talked about the roster. I think as what happens most years in preparation for the World Championships, when playoff series ends, sometimes piecemeal players get added to the roster and whatnot. So I don't think it's a fully formed team just yet. I would reserve my opinion until we have a little bit of more clarity on exactly who will be there. But I know some of the names that were bandied about are really exciting. And I know that all of the people involved are looking forward to putting a great effort in so that we can represent our country proudly.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. Before I let you go, I just want to note there was another firing today in the NHL in Seattle. A head coaching spot opened up. Might be one in New Jersey. What do you prefer? You want the West Coast? You want the East Coast? We're a powerful show here, Jay. We can get you anywhere you want to go. People listen to this show.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. What a crazy business we're in, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was reading something, 16, 17 coaches in the last year or so. But, I mean, we're all big boys. We know what we sign up for. And it's just part of what we do. So certainly for me, I'm anxious to have good conversations with people that look to talk to me. But right now, my focus and concentration is on helping our country win a gold medal over in Prague.
And good luck to you for that, Jay. We so appreciate your time, man. Wish you all the best, okay?
Thanks, guys. Have a great show.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it.
Jay Woodcroft. Yeah, quite remarkable for him to be in the business that long and barely 47 years of age.
Yeah, 05 was his first year at Detroit. He was a video coach. Had a ton of time with San Jose, Edmonton, Bakersfield, Edmonton as a head coach. Oh, yeah.
Joe Thornton.
I mean, great San Jose Sharks teams. Like, he's seen a lot for a guy who's just 47 years old.
Now, did you catch that, what he just said?
Like, I mean, I listened.
60, which part? The 16 or 17 coaches change in the last year and change.
10 just this season.
Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but there isn't another sport that comes close to that many coaching changes over a little over a year. That's crazy to me.
It is nuts.
Soccer.
Is that frequent in soccer?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Guys lose their jobs every week in soccer. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like that.
Sheldon Keefe, guys have been coaching longer
than
Sheldon.
Never like this, ever.
I can't remember a year like
Not
this.
Not close have we ever seen anything
we know the
like that.
We've talked about it a million times on the show. Can't trade anybody because there's a cap.
Yeah.
It's like, well, guess we're firing the coach.
Cooper, Mike Sullivan, Jared Bednar, Rod Brind'Amour, and Sheldon Keefe are the longest tenured coaches. And Sheldon Keefe was hired 4 years ago. You know, it's pretty crazy.
A loss tomorrow night, and there'll be another one.
Four and a half.
Right? There'll be another opening.
I think quite likely. Although Sheldon hasn't started his extension yet.
Jay should have a fun time working with Marner at the World Championship.
Who else hasn't started their extension yet that got fired?
Four other
people.
Lindy Ruff?
Yeah. Hackstall today.
Hackstall.
Kings. McClellan.
McClellan.
And Granato.
Yeah, none of them had started their next contract. And Sutter just got fired with an extension.
You're right, Sammy. That's just that's an owner just going, I got to do something.
Well, yeah, and to their credit, they care enough to pay millions of dollars to someone to not coach in hopes of winning a few more games. Yeah,
to stay home.
To stay home. Unless these guys get new jobs, in which case someone takes that contract off their hands, which they like a lot, I'm told. Actually, you know what's funniest about the longest tenured coaches? This is remarkable. Mm. After Sheldon Keith, the sixth longest tenured is Martin St. Louis.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. 3 years.
No.
Fewer time, 2.5 years fewer time than Sheldon, according to this. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, Bruce Cassidy was just after him. Torch just after him. Yeah. So Martin St. Louis, only five guys been coaching longer with their team than
that
than
is
him.
Unbelievable.
That's just again goofy.
You don't have time to set a culture, do you?
No.
2 minutes. Next.
Game time.
Game time.
Yeah.
It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, I was looking at the series scores here. I just lost it. If you want to bet, here's... Okay, sorry, hold on. Hold on. Let's just look at the games for tonight. I lost what I had.
Follow the arrows, Sammy. No,
it's a little bit complicated. I lost what I had. So we'll just go to the games for tonight. When I first looked at this, the Tampa Bay Lightning were plus 155, and they've gone all the way up to plus 165 tonight. Vegas and Bet365 is thinking that tonight is the night that the Florida Panthers advance. Minus 200, the Florida Panthers on home ice tonight.
Yeah, I would say of all the playoff odds we've heard, that might be the wrongest. So go ahead and give Tampa a click there.
And now I've picked back up what I wanted to look at. The when will series end bets.
Mm.
So here we've been talking about Toronto for the full first hour, and I'll bring it back into the national hour here in the betting segment. They have game five as a minus 165 favorite for that finish. Yeah, the Leafs.
Minus 165, okay.
So you're basically betting on the Bruins.
Yeah.
Game six is plus 375, and then game seven is plus 300. So Vegas thinks, Bet365 thinks, that if the Leafs happen to find a way to win in Boston, potentially without Austin Matthews, that they will win game six and get it to game seven. So that's what they're leaning.
So you're going to protect your emotional status by betting for the Bruins, right?
Sammy's already been.
No, I did it once. I'm not going to do it again.
No.
I if they surprise me, great. Like, I'm not heartbroken enough to do it.
I have heard the running kind of funny jokes about the Leafs that, like, just losing in, like, on Tuesday night would not be nearly painful enough for Leafs fans. So the hockey gods have to build the hope back before they pull the rug out. So I could see the Leafs winning a game
and
or
just,
two.
Just to check in on the Stanley Cup favorites to this point, the Edmonton Oilers are 4-1 right now as the favorite. The Carolina Hurricanes are plus 450. Florida's plus 550. And to me, if you want to get some really good value on a team that's already into the second round, the New York Rangers are 6-1. Loved how they looked in that
Vegas,
first one.
They go up 2-0 and
plus,
they're
10-1.
But
10-1. Really good value there.
There's a good number for you.
Right?
They did look, I bet you that game shook them a little bit. I thought Dallas looked excellent in that game.
Well, they're up 3-0. They're the favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, anyways, that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
All right, let's take a quick break because we got a ton of sound to come from Edmonton, Vancouver. We got to talk about Winnipeg and what's going on. We mentioned earlier in our Leaf Edition Hour of Cale Makar, but it still didn't do justice on how good this guy is. And then we're going to pick up a little bit more on if Tampa Bay loses, what's John Cooper's future? Sound all right, Sammy? What are you laughing at?
What are you trying to get me all fired up over here?
You're just going to have to stick around.
All right.
Yep. All right, more than real Kipper and Bourne after these words.
In-depth Blue Jays coverage with an analytical twist. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. Canucks win using their third different goalie.
Yeah. Three goalies, three wins.
And they did it before, too. It's only been done like twice, I think.
Yeah, I have it.
Twice by Vancouver, right?
Hold on. Let me pull it up here quickly. I have it.
Kluche?
Yeah, Kluche was involved. I'm sorry. I'm just scrolling down here.
Alex Auld?
I'm looking here. I can't find it. But yeah, one of them was Vancouver.
And then I heard Chicago with Tony Esposito. And
so you knew it.
A couple other guys. I did read that.
Okay. Yeah.
But
very, very, very uncommon, to say the least.
No, put that in your game time, Sammy, and give me odds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like get the odds of getting a hole in one twice.
Yeah. Svilovs is the seventh goalie in Canuck history.
How do you pronounce it?
Svilovs.
Svilovs?
What did I say? Did I say Svilovs?
I don't know.
Okay.
Svilovs.
Okay. He's the seventh goalie in Canuck history to get a win in their first Stanley Cup playoff start. So
I think he had two NHL games, maybe nine. Maybe he had nine. One of the two numbers.
Looks fine.
Let's call it nine.
I love this quote, my time to shine.
Is that what he said? Yeah. Well, and he's not afraid to show a little flair on the couple of the catches. He may have given a little hulkier to the crowd on the winner.
If you're putting in a kid, you want that.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want, I'm scared. You want, it's my time.
No, and you do. And you also, there's a thing about young people, and in golf, and you hear it sometimes too, where it's like, I think you say maybe not smart enough, but it's maybe not experienced enough to recognize the gravity of the moment. Oh, yeah. You're young. You're just like, what are you going
to
lose?
It. Too dumb to know.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'll say it.
Okay.
All right, let's get Rick Tocchet's thoughts on Brock Besser's tying goal.
All right.
Yeah, so that's a pedigree of a 40. So, you know, he scored 40 goals, something plus goals this year. I've seen it happen all year. A goal scorer knows, you know, the passer next to the one. They know the right time to shoot it, or, you know, sometimes somebody will over, you know, they'll just jam it. You see that goal? He didn't jam it. He waited, brought it back. I don't know how many seconds were left, but that's best, right? He's got a really good hockey IQ to score goals. You know, his timing is really, really good.
6 seconds. Yeah, six.
Yeah. Gus Nyquist still not recovered, by the way. He's still on the ice after his broken ankles from Quinn Hughes on that play.
It's such a crazy game that you could think of Brock Besser just a year and a half ago as an anchor contract and can't trade him, get your agent to call teams, see if you can make your own trade, and now he's just...
Nobody wants that distressed asset.
As valuable as anything out there right now.
It's a play he makes, like he said, Talk said, to not just like... Like he gets it behind the net, takes a second, brings it out, jams it home. Like
It's awesome.
And it is the ability, though. Like, and sometimes these guys are not like great skaters. He's not a great skater.
No.
But Tyler Toffoli's another one
great
to me.
Example.
Where it's when you know where to be at the right place at the right time, and then you're able, once you have the puck, once you're able to kind of slow the game down in your mind, there's some guys, it's just like, it's a grenade. Blowing up because they cannot calm themselves down and really have a feel for space and timing.
Yeah.
Brock Besser, like ice in his veins to pull it back off the goal line, 3 feet off the goal line.
He's got a great release in general when he has time, but you're right. To have the sense for, you know, where to be. And that's the biggest thing is some guys, it finds them and it's like, boy, that guy gets a lot of luck. It just comes to him and it's like, oh wait, you know, over a career, you start to figure out that guy's just kind of knows where to be. You know, this Canucks team, they get a huge game at the right time from Elias Lindholm. And you can't help but think that this team, they showed belief in this team early with the trade to get Lindholm.
Yeah.
You know, we do our Leafs piece and you don't get that deal where the GM says, I really believe in this team.
Well, that was, Bertuzzi was supposed to be Lindholm, right? Like you can have a mediocre regular season, all is forgiven. Just get it hot in the right place at the right time. Make a big play.
Sure. And that's a different story than the team in season going, we're going good. We believe in this team. And that, to me, Lindholm is that, you know, that boost. And maybe you didn't love how it went for him in Vancouver, but he gets you a playoff win. Yeah. You probably don't win the game without him, And that could be enough to win the series. Not 2-2, it's 3-1. You're going home. All of a sudden, it feels like you're going to get a series win out of that trade.
Massive swing.
Like, Aquilini liked it. Yes, I liked what happened there.
You can't, like, there are a few to have a two-goal comeback in the last, 2 minutes to not have the series go 2-2 going home, to have it go home 3-1. Like, that is such a massive swing. And, boys, I mean, we're going to get to Edmonton here in a second, but we've got a Canadian collision course here between the Canucks and Edmonton Oilers. I mean, like, that's as good as it gets.
That'd be awesome. Canucks, 71 shots in goal versus the Predators, are the fewest in NHL history through the first four games of an opening round playoff series, and they're up 3-1. Yeah. Pretty wild. Pretty wild, this sport.
Crazy game.
Stupid sport.
Crazy game. Okay, stupid. Speaking of speaking of goaltending, Skinner with his first Stanley Cup playoff shutout. Let's go to defenseman Ekholm on what he thinks of Skinner.
Obviously, early on, it was back and forth, but as soon as he gripped onto it and kind of realized, okay, I'm the guy, he's just been running with it all year. He's been great for us. I think he's showing it game in and game out, and as any goaltender, they're going to have an off night, but I think his biggest strength is the way he rebounds after those nights, and that's, in my opinion, a sign of a really, really good goaltender. You can't always control 82 games in playoffs and be on the top of your game every night, but you can always control how you rebound and how you respond to those games, and I think that's a strength of his.
To me, I love listening to a guy with a real thoughtful answer. He doesn't mail it in, right? He's giving
the commentary or the goalie?
No, the commentary on the goalie.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's important that he articulates the way he feels, because somehow, some way, it's reassuring for either the fan base, the media.
Listen.
And more importantly, Skinner. Those words go back to Skinner. Mm. Mm. And it just, again, reinforces.
Ekholm is a stud.
Yeah,
he's
a
beast.
But he reminds me of, like, Kevin Lowe was that guy for us. Like what I heard from Ekholm. And, like, of course, it's McDavid's team and Draisaitl's team, like it was Mark Messier's team and Brian Leetch. But when an Ekholm talked, or Kevin Lowe talked back then, it had a rippling effect as much as the big boys did, or even more.
Well, and, you know, I think this is reflected in the way I voted for one of my awards this year with Ekholm, who I really like. But I don't think that people know how much more value you get than just the individual player when they make other people better. And what he's done for Bouchard this year has made Bouchard, allowed Bouchard to take a step that I don't know that he would take if he spends the year with Cody Ceci or someone else. No disrespect to anyone, just to pick a random name. But, like, I don't think he's able to become the fully realized version of himself that he was this year, Bouchard. And now doing the same for Skinner and trying to, you know, elevate him. That to me is like, one guy is not just the value of one guy. It's that plus the value he gets more out of the other guys.
Lowe has a few cups, doesn't he?
Sorry?
Lowe has a few cups?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lowe's won a couple.
How many? Six?
Six Stanley Cups.
I think Ken Holland kind of takes his lumps a little bit over the years for some, you know, decisions, including, you know, the Jack Campbell contract or a couple other things. I think he absolutely stole Ekholm.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the deal was. What went the other way?
I don't know. But, like, this to me was the defenseman that probably six other teams should have paid a higher price for.
It was Reed Schaefer, Tyson Barry, and a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick.
All day long.
And that first-round pick was last year. Tanner Moldenmoldick?
Yeah, I'm not a...
And who else?
He had a good year in Saskatoon.
Okay, good.
Yep, still playing.
He's heart and soul guy.
Yeah, he is for sure. He's a big part of it. You know, last night, it is... does it change your feeling about the Oilers' Stanley Cup chances, seeing them kind of, you know, get outshot but still hang on, get some goaltending?
Yeah, I think, listen, if you can find different ways to win a few more games like that, how do you not like their chances? But
you have a game where Evander Kane looks good. You have a game where your goalie looks good.
We'll see how that blue line still holds up in the big picture for me.
I do think the Kings are not that good.
And Skinner too, right? If Skinner can hold his own.
Yeah,
you got to think that they've got a decent shot of a Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, there's definitely some.
You got to.
The Kings ain't great.
Not great.
You got to get. You're going to beat Dallas or Vegas, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get there.
Well, I mean, Colorado's pretty good right now.
Yeah, they're humming along.
Are you rating off the Jets right now?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, they're down 3-1.
Yeah.
If I wrote up the Leafs, got to.
The last three straight first rounds have seen a team come back from down 3-1.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
It's doable.
Well, they're running out of time, but let's see what Rick Bowness has to say, head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, on facing elimination.
The problems are self-inflicted. You want to take penalties. You want to play a three-quarter ice game. You're playing right into their hands. So our issues are self-inflicted. You saw us play the right way for 10 minutes in the second half of that first period. And then you play it, and then, you take four penalties. You turn the puck over. That's exactly how they want to play. So the issues are self-inflicted.
Is this just, like, no answer for Makar?
I mean, that goal is tough to not watch on repeat. Just the way he's able to cut through the neutral zone. Yeah, he makes a big difference in that. I would say that's a pretty pivotal point there for the Jets to contend with. But the biggest thing is this Jets team is supposed to be, they're supposed to be what the Boston Bruins have been so far in playoffs. Pack it in, defend, great depth all the way through, and get great goaltending. And, you know, Hellebuck hasn't given them great goaltending yet. You can't. They were never going to win if he wasn't going to give him great goaltending.
No Swayman right now.
No. And you just need him to be. So it's fingers crossed. And
Kale McCarr's got 8 points in four games. He's just dominating.
Yeah.
Again, he every time he plays half the game.
Yeah,
right.
It's like a playoff monster. He won the Conn Smythe, didn't he, 2 years ago? Was it him or McKinnon?
I can't remember. But it was one of those two. You just can't. You get no reprieve from him when you watch those games. He is just like he's undeniable. He has the puck the whole time he's on the ice.
Can you make a goalie change?
He did win it.
Can you go to Brassois?
No. I mean, Brassois has been good.
Well, they put him in the game, but they can't.
No, I'm talking about starting. Can you?
I don't know.
I think
he was good.
But you're too heavily built around one plan, right? Which is you got to start by getting Vezina caliber goaltending. And
but
I don't think.
Not
but you're
right
not going to get it from
can you
Brassois.
Change it up? I don't know.
I think that's a decision.
It's
where
gonna get
he's there
8 years.
Yeah, you
right?
gotta
be a long,
show him the loyalty.
They go out. Winnipeg goes out with Hellebuck giving up another 3 or 4 goals. This is gonna be a long summer for him.
But to Sammy's point, he just signed an 8-year contract.
I know.
There, you know.
I know.
You have a longer summer if you put him on the bench to watch. I think
his. I don't know if you know the numbers, what they actually look like.
Go ahead with them.
4 games, 5.22, .870.
No, it's not good.
Probably not.
No, they're
probably not going to get it done.
Yeah, you got to go down with.
Yeah,
Hellebuck. Go down with the ship.
Go down with the ship. Okay, no real surprises. New York Rangers sweeping Washington.
I saw
OV. Did he have a shot on goal?
Not in the last game. No, not in the first game either. 0 points.
Did he have one in the series?
He had a couple shots in the series. I think
four
or five total.
Not that we expected. Washington, like we needed Daryl Sutter's pretty much 8 days.
8 days. I saw someone tweet that the Detroit Red Wings between playoffs and regular season, they won 41 games and the Capitals won 40 total. You know,
listen, just the mere fact that they got into the playoffs was an accomplishment. That team, that roster, their inability to score all season long and like Lindgren was
unbelievable. They got to the deadline and they traded, they got rid of Kuznetsov and Edmondson and Mantha. They traded Mantha. You know, like they didn't try to make playoffs.
No,
they lost the least on the way home. And then
that's my favorite drop.
It's a very good one.
One more time.
I will say,
suck.
There's so many people who are on me and you a little bit about. You know, when I said the Caps weren't good and people were like, yeah, what do you have to say now? They made the playoffs. I'm like, still a bad team.
Still suck.
Still a bad team.
We suck.
All right, let's get a comment out of head coach of the New York Rangers, Peter Laviolette.
Seemed like we had 6 days going into this first playoff game, and it was really good for our group. We were able to get some rest right off the bat because the schedule was every other day for a month, and it gave plenty of time to prepare, and then it gave time to actually work on things on the ice. And so there's a real value in that where, you know, you can start to look at both opponents until you find out which one you're actually going to play. And so there's some value there, and I do think the rest is important. And then, you know, series that are not concluded yet that could can possibly continue to go on, there might be value there, but there's, you know, there's probably a lot of fact and proof behind the fact that a team that's gone seven and has to walk right out of a game seven overtime win and walk into the next series, they're right on point with their game too.
I mean, they're going to get a decent little break here for the Rangers, and I like the way they look.
That helps them. The quick question on the Capitals, though, what are they going to do here? Like,
well, they got decent 24-year-olds. Like, there's some stuff that they can work with. Yeah, they're not stars, but they're...
McMichael,
LaPierre scored a nice goal.
Not to be this guy, but, like, everyone's got them.
Well...
Maybe, you know, maybe not those...
You know what we're going to do?
They're missing stars.
You know what we're going to do?
What?
We're going to stand around and watch Ovi shamelessly blast them from the top of the...
Yes, circle. Correct.
That's what we're going to watch. What's he need, 47?
No, I think less.
Yeah, it's like under 45.
32? 35?
No. Oh, he needs...
What's he need?
I think it's...
It's got to be 40. He's not getting whatever the number is. It ain't happening next year.
You don't think so?
God, he got red hot to get to 30 this year. Red hot.
But he scored a ton of goals in a very short period of time.
He's got 853. What's the record? 94?
92?
Okay. No math on this show.
I think he's 39 short.
That's scary.
Yeah.
I don't know if I did that right.
He's going to be trying to shoot everything in sight. Yeah.
So that's what they... And then he gets that and he retires. Then you start.
Mm-hmm.
That's
okay.
Well, he actually doesn't retire. He goes and plays in Russia for...
What would our
years
show be
that
without a John Cooper clip for tonight's
Coop
game?
Deeper this series goes, everything amps up. So, we had the benefit of a lot of things happening early in the game, and our crowd is right into it. And I would anticipate the same atmosphere here tonight. People get jacked up, and these. Crowds are into it, so it's a ton of fun to be a part of it. But players can feed off the emotion as well, whether you're the home or the away team. It's just different ways to feed off the crowd. And so as the stakes get higher, the emotions will get higher, and I expect nothing different tonight.
I'm not here to start anything, but
start it.
There's some people wondering if Tampa loses, is this John Cooper's last game? And that's not to suggest...
Are those people?
It's not you.
Okay.
That's not to suggest that he's getting fired.
No.
But John Cooper, much like Sullivan in Pittsburgh, they're in a position now to reassess. Contracts or no contracts aside, those two guys are different from anyone else in the league where they get to go...
listen.
They get to listen. They get to mutually discuss with their team... What are we doing? Where are we going? You know, do I want to be a part of this? Do I not? If not, maybe there's something else out there.
You know, you wonder how that would work, right? Because if you think he's one of the best coaches in the league and you've got him under contract, like, I know that Paul Maurice basically just said, I don't want to be here anymore. Or, you know, I know that's a much more complicated explanation than that, but he left.
That's a show out there.
Paul left because he just knew it was...
It's time.
It was just time.
There.
It was just time for him, and it was time for Winnipeg.
But if John feels like it's time for him with Tampa Bay,
yes,
and I'm Tampa Bay, I'm like, wrong.
No,
it isn't time.
But if he feels like it's worn out, it would be.
We do not agree.
You're also factoring in. You get your future Hall of Famers. They're in the discussion too. Maybe a different voice here. Maybe how do you guys think? And
you're gonna let him go coach the Leafs and
New Jersey.
Bring your secrets, New Jersey.
There'll be a few choices for John Cooper.
Good coach.
All right.
What an offseason end. But let's stay with playoffs for Wofford.
What a show, boys.
What a show.
Lots going on. Everything is happening.
We're back again tomorrow to do it all over again. Enjoy your games tonight. If you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. Give us your thoughts on JB and Sammy. I'm excluded from that.
That'll help with our rating. Do that.
All right. We're back tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Thanks for joining us, everybody.